Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
M.O. says, here's the situation. Ivy, URM graduate, high GPA, bombed the LSAT with a 150-something. Great personal and diversity statements, so I'm told. Excellent resume and working full-time since graduating in 2021. Apps already sent early October and got a first admit to a good 25th ranked school. Thinking about doing demon prep and sending a new score to any waitlisted school. No, I didn't prep at all. Don't scold. Hoping to get at least waitlisted to a top 14. What are your thoughts? Thanks. That's coming from M.O.
I think M.O. has already identified the problem. You bombed the LSAT, which is the most important factor of all the factors here in your application, and you didn't prep. So it's not like the bomb that you got was your best score by a long shot.
I mean, if you didn't prep at all, 150-something is actually a really great cold diagnostic.
It is. So I would withdraw your applications immediately. You don't want to be tempted by any of this and then work on getting your best possible score. You can do amazing with that high diagnostic and go for free. You will no longer be hoping to get at least waitlisted at a T14. You will be going to a T14 and possibly for free.
Almost guaranteed for free.
Yeah.
Ivy, URM graduate with a high GPA.
Yep.
That's like you're going for free to almost every top 14.
Yep.
With the right LSAT. But, you know, you're like trying to force it in there at the last minute without your best LSAT. So I would do what Ben is suggesting. I would withdraw everything and just apply next cycle. You're probably resistant to that. You know, the one thing you have to do for sure is don't apply to law school without your best LSAT. Like it's just insane to apply to law school without your best LSAT. And you've already done that. So, you know, like that's a bad play.
But it's
get
easily
your
fixed
best
too.
LSAT to and rescue it. Yeah.
You can fix it by doing two things: withdrawing your applications so that you don't have any more thoughts or discussions or anything with any of these people.
Yeah, I would do that.
And then focus on your LSAT. It's going to pay you thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be rushing prep with us. You know, I'm sure we can help you. Probably we can help you a lot. But it'll be easier to help you if you're not trying to rush into, you know, a late test administration. I mean, at this point, you can't take it until January. The registration deadline is December 1st for the January test. So you could be trying to take that January test and send in your scores, you know, update your scores to the schools that haven't yet rejected you or waitlisted. It's bad to get waitlisted. You don't want to get waitlisted. You want to get admitted right away. You don't want to sneak in off the waitlist.
No.
But yeah, so I don't know. I'm not scolding, but I am giving you my advice, which would be to for sure retake the LSAT, like actually prep for it, take the LSAT, get a score that doesn't make your GPA sad. Like you're letting your talent, you're making your talent and your accomplishments sad by representing them with a shitty LSAT score.
Yep. And I'm doubling down on this and I'm adding to that to hit pause right now and go withdraw your apps.
I don't want any of that temptation down the road. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's going to be real tempting to be like, well, no, I'm only going to be one and done with the LSAT because I applied this cycle. And, you know, like even if you do spend money, you know, spend time and money and prep and work hard with us and we could help you a lot. And you move your range, you know, you improve your range by 15 points or whatever in a couple months. And you go in there averaging 170. But then you score a 164, which is still within your range, but not your best, not even close to your best, not even your average.
And then some top school offers you their scammership and you start thinking about it, and your friends say, or your, or whoever says, do it.
You're real lucky to get into that top 14. You're going to turn down a top 14. Oh my God.
They offered you, money. What are you thinking?
Yeah. They offered you money. You're going to insult them by withdrawing. No, you'd be like, you'd be crazy in that circumstance not to take it again and get a 170 something. You could very likely be going to Harvard, Stanford, Yale, or you could be going to Michigan for free.
Yep.
But you need the 170 to like put a lock on that.
And you can get it. A cold diagnostic of 150 something.
Yeah, if solid. It's no prep at all. Totally. Thanks, MO, for writing in. Hope it works out for you. We got an email here from Anonymous.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. Should I structure my resume for law school applications, capitalized, differently than I would when applying for a job? If so, what are the main differences I should be aware of? I have worked as a freelance musician and teacher for the last 8 years that I have been out of college, so my professional work experience is very broad. I'm assuming that law schools do not care about every single job I've held, so I was thinking about condensing it down to the most impressive and noticeable work I've done. Do I describe my roles and responsibilities for every job that I list, or should I combine like work into categories and list duties / responsibilities for that category? Let me know what you think. Overall, I wouldn't stress about your resume. I think there's a lot of detail here you're concerned about that ultimately isn't going to matter. The big thing here is that you are applying to an academic institution, so I suspect that they'll want your schools that you've attended and your GPA and any honors you got up top, but that should be short. And then you go into your professional work, and I agree that you should cut out things that aren't as impressive, but I think that's more like cutting out bullet points than cutting out jobs, because any job you've held shows that you work, and I don't think... Unless you did something weird, just leave it in there. Maybe you just don't have as many bullet points for it.
Yeah. And you're going to write your personal statement to highlight, you know, something probably on that resume. So they'll know a lot about one of those things.
Yeah.
You can show them bullets to teach them a little bit about some of those other things. But I think you just need to realize that the resume is the, what is it? 1, 2, 3... at least fourth, maybe even lower on how important it is.
I think they're scanning it quickly.
Does this LSAT, GPA, personal statement. How much time do they really have?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know that I have that much more to say about that. You know, if there's cool stuff that you did that you think is going to bring some flavor to your application, then absolutely, you know, have it on the resume. But spending a lot of time perfecting your law school resume when you should be studying for the LSAT just doesn't seem like it's a efficient thing to do.
That's my only concern. It's November. Do you have your best score on record? If not, don't even worry about any of this.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can do all this stuff in a week or two pretty easily. Except for the stuff that is out of your hands, letters of recommendation and the transcripts, you have to wait for those to be, you know, someone else has to do it. But personal statement, resume, all the applications, I really do think you can put that stuff off until you're done with the LSAT.
Yep. We have an email here from Will.
Will says, gents, let's talk about the likelihood of full scholarship for an academically challenged veteran. Okay, let's. I graduated from a military service academy in 2006 with a 2.34, parentheses, yeah, I'm cringing too. I went to the fleet, traveled the world, and wore the uniform through 2018. During that time, I learned a lot about myself and completed a master's with a 3.9, parentheses, doesn't count for calculations, but evidence is improvement, and I like saying it. Okay, so bad undergrad a long time ago, good master's. Given, one, I want to go to law school here in Texas, and I don't want to pay for it. Two, I don't want to use my GI Bill since I already transferred it to my children. 3, I haven't done a diagnostic, so I don't know where I'm currently sitting on a projected score. I began studying 2 months ago, and my goal is to attain a 170 or better on the LSAT. Oh, I have a note on that. 4, I know my undergraduate GPA will be reported via the 509 for the university, and anything below their average will drag them down. There's no value to them offering a full scholarship to someone in that position, regardless of their LSAT score. That's just a fact.
Whoa, that's not a given.
Yeah. Okay, so we got a couple notes there. Let me read the question and then we can come back and give our notes.
Yep.
Although undergraduate GPA and LSAT scores are the primary data for the 509s, is there any scholarship consideration given for an undergrad that was obtained over a decade and a half ago? I know I can address this in the personal statement. No, not in your personal statement. And addendum, yes, in your addendum. But what's your opinion on the likelihood of actually surmounting the 509 numbers and getting a full ride? Let's assume a 170 or better. I was very blessed to find LSAT Demon when I began my LSAT prep and immensely appreciate the massive effort y'all have put into the structure, content, and engagement of LSAT Demon. I look forward to your response, although I likely already know the answer. Keep up the great work and keep moving forward! Exclamation point. Very respectfully, Will. Thanks, Will, for writing in. Under given number 3, you say, I haven't done a diagnostic, so I don't know where I'm currently sitting on a projected score. And then you say, I began studying 2 months ago. And that makes me kind of, as a teacher, it makes me kind of facepalm a little bit, because it's just like, dude, what are you doing? Take a fucking practice test. Like, you don't study for 2 months without taking a practice test. That's crazy. You don't have to do it all in one sitting. You could do one section a day. That's fine. But take a practice test. If you're not taking practice tests, then I don't know what you're doing studying, but you're not taking my advice for what you should do in your studies. So welcome to the Demon. I'm glad you're here. I want to help you. You need to take a practice test, and you need to start taking them kind of regularly.
Yeah. Once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks would be good. But I think we both agree that the bulk of people's study should be time sections and drilling, right? Going back and forth between those two things. I agree, though, 100%. You need to get in there and take a practice test.
Even if all you do is timed sections, you know, one a day, one every other day, whatever, we can still calculate your score. So
yep,
we would have some idea where you're at. And like, it's just useful to get some idea where you're at. Plus, you need to start doing the test under timed conditions so that you can get used to the fact that the clock is ticking and you're probably not going to finish and you're going to just do your best on every question. Like, that's a skill that you have to practice. And if you're not timing yourself, then you're just not practicing that skill. It's not possible.
Yep.
Ben is going to quibble with your given number 4.
Yeah. You said in number 4, I know that my undergrad GPA will be reported via the 509 for the university. Yes, that is true. Well, it won't specifically be reported, but it will affect the GPA numbers that are reported. And anything below their average will drag them down. There's no value to them offering a full scholarship to someone in that position, regardless of their LSAT score. That's just a fact. Well, just a couple episodes ago on this podcast, we reviewed, what is it? Law School Data, LSD? .com?
Yeah.
Or lsd.law. Sorry.
lsd.law. Yeah. And if you look at the school reports there, you're going to definitely see what were the ones we went through? WashU in St. Louis.
Arizona. Yep.
Arizona, UCLA. Check out the schools in Texas. It could be different there, but the odds are that those schools are still admitting a shit ton of high LSAT, low GPA splitters. So I can go, okay, let's take a look at UT Austin Law School for starters.
Yeah, let's do it.
Now, that's a great school and possibly higher ranked than you're going to be going scholarship fishing at with a real low GPA. Mm-hmm. But they have a pretty clear line of yellow where they're waitlisting people at, you know, exactly 169 LSAT. And then they have a pretty clear line of green people that starts like right at 170 LSAT.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like they are really making lots of admissions decisions based on LSAT. And I can see here that they are at least admitting, and these aren't wait lists, by the way, these are admits. They are admitting people with like, you know, 175, 2.5.
Yeah.
Spiteful, resolute Impala.
Impala. Oh yeah. Oh, that's an I. Yeah. 175 LSAT GPA 2.53 admit.
This is UT, right? But let's go ahead and let's look at these other schools, because if you just want to stay in Texas, there's other law schools in Texas, and Texas A&M Law School. Yeah, they're admitting lots of low GPA folks. I mean, I can see a half dozen people who have below a 3.0 who did not get waitlisted, who got admitted.
Yep.
And, you know, play around with the scholarship estimator, because we have seen splitters get scholarships.
Yep.
So I just don't. Yeah, I definitely do not agree with your premise there, Will, that it's impossible to get that scholarship. Now, how closely can we predict it? Not at all. You need to get your very best LSAT, apply broadly, negotiate.
Yep.
And then decide.
I think that's it.
Yeah, I wish we could predict it like exactly, you know. The one thing I know for sure, Will, is that your outcomes are going to be wildly better the better your LSAT gets. Like you're below the 50th percentile at every law school on your GPA. That's fine. Be above the 75th percentile on LSAT at the schools you're fishing for scholarships at, and you should start to see some money if you follow our advice and apply broadly.
I do have one question for Will. I respect the fact that you're in Texas. It sounds like you have children, they're in Texas. You have family in Texas and you want to stay there. But I do have a question for you, and that is, if you could go for free to a school in another state, would you consider it? And if you would, then I would consider applying to some of those schools to see what you can get. Of course, look at the scholarship estimator. Don't waste your time on schools that are unlikely to give you a scholarship. But if there are schools that are likely to give you a scholarship with your numbers in other states, consider applying.
You should apply to at least a few of them out of state, Will, just so that you can see what kinds of offers you might be able to get. Yeah, throw in that application to Wash U in St. Louis, or throw in that application to, I don't know, some other school that's in the same time zone, or, you know, one or two states away, and just see what kinds of, don't sell yourself short. We've seen, I mean, you sound like a really good applicant. Law schools love military candidates, by the way.
At the very least, right? A full ride scholarship from someone that you are unlikely to go to, but might go to, could be enough to push another school in Texas to give you more money.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Absolutely. Thanks, Will. Also, I did want to say commendations on already transferring your GI Bill money to your kids. That's excellent. That is a real nice way to just, you know, decide right now that you're not going to spend that money on law school tuition. It's just not a good use of that money if you have any other use for it. And your kids sounds like a very worthy use. So play the scholarship game and get significant, if not full, ride to law school. That's a great plan. We got an email here from Jacob.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. Seeing that official LSATs use the same interface as LawHub, do you think it may be beneficial to switch from dark mode to light mode on LSAT Daemon to get used to the brighter background? I prefer the dark mode a lot more, but I don't know if reading white texts with black backgrounds will mess with my reading on the real test, where I'll read black texts on white background. I've done a few tests and sections on LawHub for this reason, and I don't think it made a drastic difference. But if you think it is better to just switch to light mode altogether, I'll do it. Thanks, Jacob. I actually think in LawHub, we can avoid this whole issue because you can actually do dark mode, from what I understand or remember.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And is that true on the official test? Does the official test have dark mode?
I would be shocked if you can do it in... It was an accessibility thing. So, yeah, I that's why I think it's in there.
Okay, Jacob. So maybe play around on LawHub and see under accessibility if there actually is a dark mode on the official test. But whether there is or is not, I think you're giving the test too much power here. I mean, I understand and I respect that you are worried about any differences between your official test and your practice tests. I get it. But like dark mode, white text or black background, white text versus black text, white background. Who gives a shit? Like you're not I don't think you're even going to notice it if you're properly tuned into the content of the test. You know, like if you dropped the LSAT in front of my face and said, hey, it's on like times 35 minutes has started. Do it. I don't think even notice whether it was dark mode or white mode. I would start reading the first sentence.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, to try to this is the kind of question that indicates that you're maybe potentially lacking a little bit of swagger in relation to the test. Sometimes people are like, but how do you get that swagger? You know, well, act like shit like that just doesn't matter because it doesn't matter. Like, make up your mind that things of that nature can't possibly change your performance. Your performance is going to be related to how well you understand the content. And unless you've got like some visual impairment or something, I can't imagine that kind of a thing is enough to be really significant to your performance. Do you agree, Ben, or am I totally wrong about that?
No, I agree. But to the extent it bothers you, just practice in light mode and then go back and forth so that you can get comfortable with ignoring that, right? People are bothered by the timer when they first start. They need to get over that. If you're being bothered by the brightness, okay, practice both, get over it. But it may take some practice, fair enough. I did look in LawHub, by the way, and I don't see these accessibility features. I think what I'm remembering is when the test was on a tablet back in the day, remember we went in person, but we were on the Microsoft tablet? Oh, I did that and it was accessible. You had this accessibility option, which made everything in dark mode. So I guess maybe not.
Not since they moved it online.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a whole new software and everything. Probably is.
I think it is. It doesn't look the same as far as I remember.
Huh. All right, Jacob, good luck. I think that this is real small potatoes compared to all, you know, just improvement on the LSAT comes from really just understanding what it's asking you. And so it's great that you're ticking off all the boxes here, but I can't imagine that this is the type of thing that really is worthy of very much of your attention. We've got an email here from Taylor.
Hey guys, I could possibly attain my semi-dream job working as a terrain park manager for a local ski hill this winter.
Cool.
Okay, great. Good luck. This position is full-time and might conflict with my undergrad schedule. I'm thinking of only taking 2 to 3 classes to allow myself to work at this job. Will law schools view this negatively? I have a 3.83 UGPA currently, and I'm dead set on receiving A's for the remainder of my undergrad career. I just don't know if law schools would judge me for taking a lower course load for a couple semesters. Is this even an issue if I'm not getting all A's? I'm sorry, if I'm getting all A's? I don't think it matters.
Nope, not going to matter one bit.
In fact, I mean, having a job and being able to talk about it and what you learn from it could be well worth.
Well, especially this, because they're just not going to get very many applications from a terrain park manager. I mean,
yeah,
like get straight A's and then write your personal statement about kicking ass as a terrain park manager.
Yep.
That's awesome. That'll be great. Like they'll have some flavor of what you did as a, you know, you're going to have stories about managing people or little tragedies that happened and you were there to fix them or who knows what. There's like all kinds of cool stuff there. Not that you have to write it about that, but I mean, even on a resume, right? Even as a bullet point on a resume, that's a cool thing that somebody might go, oh, wow, this guy's like probably a great skier or gal is a great skier. And, I just think that's like super, super cool.
Yep. get, as you know, to get the A's. That's all that matters.
Yeah. Get the A's. Yeah. Take fewer classes. Do what you love. Get this dream job. Put off law school as long as possible. And when you do apply, you're going to have like cool experience to talk about and straight A's.
Yep.
There, I'm like doubting that the schools are even going to notice that you took a lower course load for a couple semesters.
Nope. I don't think they're going to notice. I think they're going to look at your GPA.
Especially because we're still just coming out of a 3-year global pandemic where everybody's academic record got all jacked up anyway.
Yeah.
So get the GPA. I mean, get all A's from here on out, right? Like try to bump up that 3.83 if you can. Whenever you're ready, get the best LSAT you can. But no, that's take. It's like if it's your dream job, the answer is take it. Like, I don't care what it does to your law school applications. And here it doesn't do anything to your law school applications anyway.
Yep.
Possibly make them better.
Cool.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.